So, what is prompting me? I want to be real about doing this episode right now is I literally just scrolling on Twitter, minding my business, and I see Rick Santorum, and there is a tweet that is going around where he is basically, I don't know where he's at, and he's basically, for those who may not know, Rick Santorum is a just look him up. We don't even need to do all of that. But he's basically, there is a video where he is basically saying, like, he's talking about Christianity and basically how this country was developed on Christianity because the people that came to settle in the country were coming because they wanted religious freedom and the freedom to practice their faith. And they birthed this nation. It's in our DNA. That's what we were built on. And like, look, there is no other nation like us. There is no other nation that has done this. Every other country has developed. Literally, these are the words. Every other country has developed, and we are who we are, and we are the same. And there was nothing, when you look at American culture, I mean, there was nothing really here before that. I mean, yeah, the Native American, like, fuck the Native Americans. There was nothing here before that. We did all of this. And that is bringing up a lot for me right now. And just with everything that has been going on, I don't even want to say the world, just everything lately, just is bringing up a lot. And so I like to use this forum in addition to my therapist, in addition to journaling and meditation. This is a forum that I like to use to express. And so I got some things I need to say, some things I need to unpack real quick. So please indulge me for a second. Welcome to the light. Welcome to the Light Podcast. My name is Amira, and I am your host. I am a regular 20-something trying to figure out life. And a way that I do that is through this podcast, where I reflect on my past, process my present, and plan for my future. I believe in the power of storytelling, and I hope that in doing so, I am able to inspire others to light up their own space and be the change that they would like to see in this world. If you enjoy the Light Podcast, I encourage you to share with a friend, rate and review, or if you just keep listening, that works too. Enough of the small talk, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode of The Light. I cannot talk about anything as it relates to me and my Black identity without first starting about where I grew up. So I just want to tell you, in case you don't know, if you're listening to this, you probably know. But I grew up, I was raised and pretty much have lived for like 97% of my life in the eastern suburbs of Atlanta, aka the East Side, aka whatever you want to call it, aka what I call it, Black suburbia. So if you're not familiar with Black suburbia is, I want you to just imagine what you think it might be, and that's probably what you will see. So suburban, like, houses, street lights, sidewalks, maybe potentially, but just throw a lot of black on it. That's where I grew up all of my life. And so literally since I was 2 until I was like 13, that's what my life was. And even high school, I did travel high school about 25 miles where I went to school in a northern part of this, like, northern suburbs of Atlanta, kind of, sort of. And my school was diverse, but it's still we're still in the suburbs of Atlanta. So it's still a certain amount, a lot of blackness, and just surrounded by blackness all the time. And so I'm talking about, like, most things that are, everything that I occupy, whether that be at school, even when I went to the school, I was still surrounded by black folk, like, all the time. Go to church, black. My soccer team, black. Ballet, black. Music lessons, piano, violin, black. Grocery store, black. To the point where there was a moment in my life, I might have been like 8 or 9, and I was just like, white people just, I don't ever see them, right, outside of TV or outside of, hearing about them when we learn about black history and we learn about all the terrible things that happened, or maybe when we're learning about presidents. So they, at one point, I remember thinking they were kind of like aliens to me. That's how little exposure that I had to them. And really, I wouldn't even say to them, I would say most races. So, like, when I say black, it's like it ain't diverse, it's black. And I always thought that that was a normal experience. I thought, like, you know, black people live where black people live. And then I'm getting older, and even now I'm like, oh, that's not, that ain't everybody's experience. It might be, I might be in the minority of folk that have had that experience. And I am grateful for it. It comes with, you know, its own stuff, which we can unpack on another episode. Not the reason for this. But still, even in that, and then my college was pretty much, Valdosta State is pretty much what I think is technically classified as a predominantly black institution. But even in all of that, right, still like grappling with race in general was something that to this day, I'm still grappling with what it means for me to be black and for me to be a black woman. I don't separate those two. I think it's just too weighted. It intersects too much. And so that is just who I am. But my first real, like, I always, people say, well, it's been so worn out now. But I think that there are periods where you do, because of how we are socialized, because of what we are taught, even in schools, even in black experiences, right? We're still not taught. It's still the book from the county, right? And your teachers can go above and beyond to do certain things, but there's still this socialization that even happens amongst black folks. And so my first, I think, moment of awakening was in undergrad. We had to go to, oh no, let me not say we had to. Trump came to Valdosta State University in the primaries. This is when people still thought he was a joke. I still thought it was a joke that he was running for president. It was, we weren't taking it serious yet. He hadn't won the primaries. It was February 29th, actually, 2016. He came to our school. My parents kept saying, like, oh, wow, this may be a potential president. Again, it was still, you know, I don't think we really knew yet. I did. I don't know. Anyway, so my parents were like, oh, you should go because you're never going to know, you know, you're never going to be in the presence of a president. I was nervous. There were a lot of protests happening at Valdosta State, student-led, and just a lot going on. But I went. I personally didn't participate in protests. I was really just going because my parents thought it was a good idea. And it was a time in my life where if my parents think it's a good idea, okay, I may not be a totally with it, but I'll go because they know better or they know more than me. Child. So it was me and two of my friends. And when I tell you that, so Valdosta, again, the school was black, but think about, I don't know if you know where Valdosta is. It's literally South Georgia. Like, it's Valdosta, then you go, you hit Florida, if you go maybe like 18 miles down the road. And so we're in Hicksville. And so it's like where I grew up, this ain't that. This is not what that is. And so granted, while the school didn't feel that way, the area and the surrounding areas, which is why he had a rally down there. And so he had a rally. And, you know, outside of the fact that it was just absurd, the things that he was saying, what really rattled me more was the crowd and just the way they reacted and just how unsafe my friends and I felt, because it was clear that we didn't belong there. It's clear that we may be coming to start trouble potentially, which we weren't. We generally, I don't think any student actually, even the students that were protesting, let me make that clear, were necessarily coming to start trouble. But I will say my friends and I, we literally were just like literally coming. There was no problem. We weren't doing any of that. But I think even just because of the skin color, there was suspicion. There was, and we felt it. It was something I had never experienced anything like that in my life. And so that, I can't even describe it, but that was my first awakening. And I was like, oh, that's when I, like, the next day we got to vote in the primaries and I was fired up. So 2016, if you knew me in 2016, I was fired up. And that, going to that rally is what really rattled me. But my real awakening came later that summer of 2016. So a lot is going on in my life. I'm vulnerable. I just graduated from college. I don't know what I'm doing yet. So those feelings are happening. And I will say, so Amira at this time, I went to school, I went to college like in the height. So Trayvon Martin was murdered like when I graduated from high school. Mike Brown was like my sophomore, junior year. Eric Garner, same thing. Ferguson, like that's I'm in college while all of these things are happening and I know about them, but I'm not really all that invested and you know, just not all that into it. And very much because I had adopted this idea of like those stories, you know, like, yes, they probably shouldn't have died. But I was very much raised. My mom always says the same for my grandma, like, you know they're not going to treat us fair, so do what you have to do. And so I have very much adapted that mantra very much. And so 2016, I want to say it was like July of 2016, I was on Facebook minding my business, just scrolling, and there's a video. And in the video, there is a man that you may know his name, Philando Castillo. And in the video, he's in the car, he gets stopped, his fiance's in the car, his child's in the back seat. He does everything that we are ever taught to do. When the cops stop, you do this. He even went above and beyond to say, hey, bro, I have a gun, like I am armed. And it still was murdered. And for me, like talking about it right now is like a lot. That was a moment for me where it radicalized me. Like it like lit me on fire and I just bawled on my bed and I was like, I had a moment of like, oh, it don't matter. You could do anything, right? Granted, I think we all know, even my grandma, now I can't really take to hear that statement. Even in the statement, there is truth in the sense of like, it's not fair, right? But my problem with that statement is like, okay, but that's not right, right? So let's hold these people accountable, right? And not just accept that as our truth. And so it radicalized me and I was fired up. That happened in 2016. I'm telling you, I was angry until probably, I would say, last year when the anger just was too much. I was angry for about 4 years, just on fire, just immersed. And I immersed myself in blackness. I immersed myself. I didn't want to watch nothing but black shows. I didn't want to be around nobody but black people, just black, black, black. Then I take my black butt to grad school in Clemson, South Carolina, where it is just white, the whitest place I, to this day, have ever been to for an extended period of time. And so that had an impact on me. And not only was I in grad school, so I studied student affairs. And my program, not only do I study student affairs, my program is very much based in social justice, my graduate school program. And so we are talking about this stuff every day, right? And not just race, right? We're talking about, you know, other areas that I hold privilege in. We're just, you're thinking about your identities. You're just all day long, right? And so you're talking about it all day long. And so you're feeling it over and over again. And in a place like Clemson on top of it, a place that I wouldn't deem as a safe space. I would deem it as traumatic for black students. And so just all of that and just being angry and being mad. Like I would be walking around campus, y'all, listening to J. Cole, because that was the year K.O.D. came out, 1985. Just walking around mad, just mad. I was reading books, Invisible Man by Michael Smith. I don't know what's his middle name. I can't place it. But Michael Smith, Invisible Man, and he's mad in that book. And I was just angry, just pissed, just mad, just angry, and just on fire. So that is kind of my evolution in my identity. That's a very short snippet of my evolution. And so, again, grad school, we're talking about it all the time. Kind of by the end of grad school, though, I was able to, there's a whole theory that we study in school. And I think learning that about like how you come into your black identity, it's by Alex Cross, if you're interested in checking it out. Once I learned about that, though, I was able to put like words to how I was feeling. And so he talks about like, you know, you may have a moment where as a black person, you've never really experienced or have been, what's the word? You didn't realize potentially that you experienced racism, right? And so I would say that was kind of me before the Trump thing, going to the Trump. And so Trump was kind of my encounter for me, my real, then you have an encounter, right, with racism. And my encounter, I would say Trump, but then I would also say the Philando Castile thing where I was like, oh, okay, this hit me. Then you go into immersive where you just throw yourself into the blackness and you just on fire. And that was me for a while. And then you come out of it and it's a whole bunch. I don't even need to tell you everything, but that's kind of what. So I'm learning that. And so that's putting like, oh, okay, this was my encounter, right? This is where I'm at now. And I would say I'm still pretty much, I prefer to be immersed in blackness. I do. And this is just a safe space for me right now. I love being black. It's the most amazing thing in the world, despite all of the foolishness that comes along with it. And so that's kind of where I'm at, right? And so where I'm at in 2020 is there, but also in a space of like, I don't want to be angry anymore. I am tired of being angry. I'm still at Clemson, South Carolina, in Clemson, South Carolina, in the middle of a pandemic, graduating. So another vulnerable time in my life. And the George Floyd thing, sorry, let me correct that. George Floyd was murdered and it took over social media, like took it over. To this day, I have not watched the video. I've heard the audio by accident once while listening to a podcast. We did not have a trigger warning, but I cannot watch it. I cannot listen to it. I can't read about it. I cannot engage with it. It is too much. I literally had to get off of social media last summer because it was too much for me. It was just too much. It was too much. And even the murders of the big murders that we heard about Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, like to this day, I don't even really know all of the details because I am at a place right now, especially in my blackness, where I cannot engage too much, or it's going to just like completely just wreck me. And so every now and then though, because you can't avoid it, right? No matter how much I try to disengage, there are just sometimes where Rick Santorum pops up on your timeline and says foolishness, talking about, well, there's not really a Native American culture here. Well, what do you think that is about, Rick? Like, what? It's the gall. It's the gall for me. It's the gall. But in the comments, someone did say, you know, this is a product of, you know, yes, this is terrible. This is egregious. But this is a product of what, like, people really believe this. Like, this is something that we, all of us, I would say, to an effect, are taught in school. And so I am grateful coming full circle back to the experience that I've had, but also even just in my high school. Shout out to my 11th grade United States history teacher, Ms. Tanell. If you went to Chambly, you may probably know. She broke down American history in a way that I think was healthy for us to hear it, because she, for the first time in my life, like it described you know, the European settling in America as genocide. Like, she was the first person I ever heard say it like that and made it very clear to us that that's what it was. Make no mistakes about it, y'all. That's what this is, and said it so passionately, right? And then that led me to understanding, okay, slavery is like, the way we talk about it sometimes, it's like, oh yeah, this thing that happened. But sometimes it takes away from like the egregiousness. It's almost like it's a normalized thing. And so that, all of that is coming up for me as I'm listening to him. All of that is just coming up. And so I just needed to get that off my chest. I don't even know what to do with that. But this podcast, sometimes I reflect on my past. Sometimes I process on my present. Sometimes I plan for the future. And this is one where I'm doing a little bit of reflecting and a lot of processing, and just processing what all of that brings up for me. And so even in moments where I hear the verdict of the Derek Chauvin trial last week, for me, I did release. I had a release that, like I said, I've been disengaged. I've been intentionally not engaging with that trial. Like, can't even do it, dog. Every now and then I'll see a clip or two, but I couldn't do it. And mainly because I just didn't believe that it was going to be the basic thing that it ended up being, right? And so I know people have a lot of feelings. There's been a lot of critical things. But I will say that I just released a lot of, it was joy, right? I was relieved. I took a breath, and I did unapologetically. I took a breath, accidentally kind of listened to, it's a whole thing how I heard. And it's one of those moments where I will always remember what I was doing during that time. I was personally door dashing and somebody was listening to it. And I was like, oh, let me listen to that real quick. I haven't been paying attention, but something just told me to listen to it. Turn on V103. And literally right on time, I hear the verdict, finish my dash. I go celebrate Taco Tuesday, which I don't ever really do anymore. Got a margarita, enjoy myself, and just took that moment to just be happy. I played my Black as Fuck playlist, which includes Black Parade by Beyonce, which also includes Black by Buddy. And then my new favorite, Always Black by Belief. You should check those out. And I took a moment to just revel in it, right? It's not the end. It's not at all where we want to go. You know, celebrating that seems egregious. But I just needed that moment to release it. At the moment, I don't even think I realized, like when I released, I had realized how much I was holding. And so I don't want to hold anymore. I want to release when I can. And so sometimes I do that in therapy. A lot of times I do it in my journal. And then sometimes I come on here just to talk to whoever wants to listen. So thank you for listening to me. This is super cathartic, getting this, like being able to talk about it and just say my piece without, you know, comments or other people's feelings. Just be able to say it is helpful. So thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I wish you nothing but love, peace, and happiness as you go throughout your week. And I will catch you next time right here on The Light.